Good day from Wall Street. This is Jack Marks for Wall Street Reporter. Today I'm speaking with Nick Appleyard. He's the CEO of TriStar Gold. Stock symbol is TSG on the Toronto Venture Exchange. Nick, welcome.
Thank you very much. Welcome. Thanks for having me, Jack.
Absolutely. So, Nick, let's get started. Maybe if you could tell us about TriStar's, exploration model for gold and some of your key projects.
Okay, absolutely. Yes, at TriStar, we're a gold explorer developer. Our business model is based on the fact that the large producing companies are not doing exploration or not doing very much exploration at all these days. So there is going to be, and there is now, a shortage of big projects being developed and ready for production in 5 to 10 years time from now. So our business model is built around finding projects with the potential to produce over 150,000 ounces a year for 10 years and de-risking them through to a point where a large company is going to want to put them into production. In a nutshell, that's what we do.
Yeah. Okay.
And, so here at TriStar, we found a project. I came in 3 years ago. We identified the potential. We had a couple of 100,000 ounces, and now we've moved it to a significant resource, and it's still moving forward. So, yeah.
Okay. And where is this located? Like, do you have a geographic focus?
Absolutely. The focus of the company would be really the Americas. The project, the first one we're working on here, called Castelo dos Sonhos, is down in Brazil, in central Brazil. It's actually, if people know Brazil a little bit, it's in right on the southern portion of Pará State. So it's in the mining center of Brazil. And it's where you want to be if you're mining there. Every country, such as part of my history, is mining in the U.S. If you're doing that, you want to be in Nevada. If you're in Brazil, you want to be in Pará State. So we're in a good part of Brazil to be mining.
And what makes that area, conducive for gold potential, where you are right now?
Well, the gold is a weird metal. Gold, there was a saying in geology, which is really silly, but it's gold is where you find it. Gold can turn up in strange places. The part that makes this area conducive to the mining is the fact that it's there's no high value competing land use that we're working against. So you're not near a national park, you're not near high-value agriculture, you're not in an area where people aren't going to want to mine. So you're a long way from people, but you're close to infrastructure. That's the catch you always want with mining. No people, but you want the infrastructure available so that you're not building power lines or roads or water lines, hundreds of kilometers to get to where you are. So we're 15 kilometers off of a paved highway. We've got a small town near us about 20 kilometers away. But we've got all the infrastructure that we need. So it's a nice combination of very few people, but all the infrastructure you need. And the metal's there, the gold's there, and there's mining in the region. So the people in the area understand mining, understand that it's part of what drives their economy and what puts food on the table every day. And importantly, they also understand that the difference between informal mining and the damage it can cause and modern commercial mining run by an international company that can be done properly. So that understanding is critical to advancing a project these days.
Okay. And can you kind of give us a quick snapshot of the history of this project, how long you've been working on it and some of the exploration results you've achieved so far?
Yeah. So the project was discovered there were informal miners working in the region in the 1990s, and then Barrick Gold moved in 1995, trying to find out what the informals were looking at, what they'd found. Barrick did a little bit of exploration work there in the late 90s. Moved away when metal prices went down really low.
Now, Nick, I'm sorry. When you refer to informal miners, like what exactly is that?
These are locals, people working with wheelbarrows, hammers, and shovels.
Okay.
Literally, local people have come out. When you see these photos of land of mining rushes in third world countries, you'll just get the stream, generally in streams. So what we had here, the streams that away from, not actually on our property, but the streams that come off of it, have all got a lot of gold in them. So the people were there panning in the streams, much as they would have done when they had discovered gold in California, people going and panning the streams and then trying to dig up every bit of stream they can to find out where the gold is. So that was happening in this region of Brazil.
Okay.
And that's where I was also referring to. That style of mining can be quite damaging to the environment. So you really want to get a proper company in to do things, you know, with environmental controls and do things correctly. So that was happening here up until about 1999. They've all been moved on by the federal government. Yeah, they've sort of, you know, enforced stricter environmental laws. So that's no longer legal. And so TriStar picked up the property before I was involved in TriStar in 2011. Started to do some work for the next, you know, through 2011, 2015, developed the resource to 280,000 ounces. Then when I joined, we joined with a new vision of a much larger project than had been seen before. So in the last 3 years now, we've taken that, you know, the 5 years before they got the resources to 280,000 ounces. Since coming in now, we've brought in some very new science. So this is a nice project where it's not just traditional work. It's, you know, there's some cutting edge science gone into the interpretation and the development of this project. And so we've now gone from 280,000 ounces to 2 million ounces last year, which is 1.3 million ounces of inferred resource and 700,000 ounces of indicated resource. So we've grown by a factor of seven over a couple of years, which is huge for a project in this period, you know, of this size. And it's now got to a size where a lot of people are interested in this project. So,
and what kind of
so the results?
What kind of technology are you using? You mentioned science.
It's really the combination of new science. We've done paleoplate reconstruction to 2.1 billion years ago, which is science that couldn't have been done more than a couple of years ago. Everyone's heard of Gondwana land and, you know, and the dinosaurs and the Jurassic on the supercontinent. Well, this is like five times older than that. So this is much before that time. So that sort of new science, because we've had to reconstruct what the world looked like at this time to understand how this deposit was formed. We've also used cross-reference technologies from the oil industry. We've used basin modeling technology. We've used some downhole drilling optics. So we actually, instead of just drilling a hole and taking a sample out, we drill a hole and we take a photograph of the inside of the drill hole, and that photograph is actually oriented, and we actually get a lot of other readings, geophysical readings off of it. So we're drilling the same hole that every other exploration company drills, but we're probably getting a, you know, order of magnitude more data out of it, and that's allowing us to move this project forward faster and have a much better understanding, which leads to faster de-risking. Everything in mining is, you know, you have a geological discovery, and then from that point forward, I was thinking, you've got to de-risk it and move it forward. So that's what we're doing, but we're using these new technologies in downhole drilling, the imaging, the photographing the inside of a drill hole, and the modeling of the basin, and so it's been quite interesting. We have actually published an academic paper on it as well, so to just describe what we've been doing.
Very interesting. So what's on the agenda for the coming year in terms of exploration?
Okay, well, as I said, we've grown the resource by a magnitude of seven. We published an exploration target range in March of 2016 saying we believe there's between 2 and 4 million ounces on this property. As I said, last year we got the resources to 2 million ounces. We've still got a lot of the property to drill. The idea this year is to keep drilling, seeing where we can get to, add significantly and more resources to it, and at the same time then start to move it forward in the permitting process. One of the things that's happened in Brazil, which has been very, very positive, is the change in government. They've had a very left-wing government over the last 10 years or so. They've swung to the right now, and the new government is very pro-investment, pro-business, wants things to move forward, wants to cut through red tape. So we see, and everyone in Brazil and every industry sees that things are going to start getting better and move faster there. So we want to be moving this project forward while this government is there and, you know, and proactive in bringing investment into the country. So our plans for this year are, you know, to drill, grow the resource, and start the permitting process to move this towards production.
So you're actually intending to become a producer yourself. You actually intend to go into production. You're not going to sell it off to a miner?
The production decision's probably 2 years away on this project. We have to do a feasibility study, which will take it to the end of next year. Our business model has, like I said, we always say the value is driven because we're going to develop a big project which will be suitable for a large company to build and produce. That is the most logical route for this. With us as a small company trying to build a big mine for the first time, that's a risk point in the development of a mine and of a mine life. So we won't say that we won't build it ourselves, but I think the logical thing is that we would find a partner or we would sell the project to a big company. Yeah, because this project is going to produce well over 150,000 ounces a year for a long time. So that's a big mine, and to build that as a small company would be a challenge. So I think it's more likely either we bring in a partner. That's what I've done in previous companies at International Minerals. We bought Hochschild's Mining and they took 60% of the projects and they put them into production. That meant that risk of moving into production as a junior company is just gone because you bring in a producing company in. So that was a very good model that might work very well, or if a larger company wants to buy the whole thing, they just have to bring a very big checkbook.
Okay. So when you said, so I guess when you said you're planning to move towards permitting, essentially once you get this permit, at that point there'll be a decision made as to which direction to go in.
Yeah. So to ultimately get your production to build a project, there's quite a lot of work you've got to do before that. If we are going to sell this or attract a big investor to come in and partner with us, they're going to want to see all that pre-permitting work done. So that's what we want to start now. And again, it's to do with that de-risking, make sure you've done all of the work, checked every box to make sure that you can get the permits that, that we should be able to get. So yeah, if we want to get that done, start that work now. It's it takes you a couple of years of work to get the permit, and the earlier you start, the better. But you're adding value to the project the whole time. So
okay, so you're basically teeing it up.
Yeah, exactly. We're getting it ready, and this is what both myself and my executive team. We've all had a lot of experience working with large companies and building large mines, and we know that they want something that's been done correctly, and it's not just a very narrow scope of work. Right, you've built. There's a lot of gold in the ground. It's like you've got the gold, you've got the environmental side, you've got the community side, you've got the community support, you've got the local government support. So you really want the whole package so that the mine is ready to be built with local support and with the blessing of the local government and the federal government. So, yeah, you want to work at every level.
Okay. Speaking more of that, Nick, can you tell us, about, your background and also some of the other key players on the team?
So my background, I'm a geologist originally from Australia. But I was with, the last 20 to 23 years, I've been working on projects predominantly in South America. I probably lived half of the last 23 years in South America, predominantly in Peru. So we developed the Immaculata mine, the Pallancata mine there, which are now the core of Hochschild's Mining. I then ran Chaparral Gold, which was a Nevada-based explorer. We sold that in 2015 in March. But during that period of International Minerals and the Chaparral Gold, this is where we sort of built up a really, we're not really a team, these guys are my partners, we can take a project from exploration, a geological exploration, turn it into a business plan, which is really what we do. So we've got, the other key people like my, vice president, Moshe Vastava, is probably one of the leading resource estimates of geologists, in the world. We have CFO Scott Brunson was the CFO of Placer North America, so he can do international tax, deal structure, corporate financial controls, as well as anybody out there. Tony Brown is a process engineer. He was senior process engineer for engineering. So we've got these high-level people that sort of across the board in every area, and including on our board of directors. Mark Jones was the founder of the company. He's now chairman. Again, a long history of bringing companies forward, developing them, and selling them off as a win for shareholders and investors. So we have a team of people that have done a lot of this before. Quentin Hennig is one of our important directors, as well as an expert on this style of deposit. It's a paleoplacer, so he's got his own company, Novo Resources, running paleoplacers in Western Australia. So he brings a lot of credibility to us as a world expert on these types of deposits, saying, yeah, this is what we say it is, and he's supportive of it. So yeah, we've got I think for a junior company, the team is exceptional. I mean, the quality of the people is much, much higher than normal. And that's where, again, it feeds back to our business plan. Most senior companies don't really like receiving studies from junior companies because they don't believe they've been done the way the senior company would like to see it. When we do a feasibility study, it's going to be instantly recognizable to a major. They're going to see the resources done the way they've done them. They'll understand how they've done them, and they're going to trust them. They're going to see the cost estimates. If we say the capital cost of something is X, they're going to be able to review it. They're going to be able to audit it. It's going to be presented in an auditable manner. And they'll be very quickly be able to get a trust in those numbers. They're always going to do their own checks, but it's going to be presented in a way that allows that to be done very easily and allow them to get comfortable very easily. So the team is exceptional that we've got.
Excellent. So let's recap. What are the key milestones over 2019 that investors can look forward to? What should investors be keeping an eye on?
So the main things are, we're at the 2 million ounce mark now, which is 1.3 inferred, 0.7 indicated. Growing that, we had this target of getting between 2 and 4. We want to see how far into that range we can get. We've got a lot of shallow targets, easy targets to hit. So we want to see where we can get this resource to. And then we'll be updating our scoping study. So really the big things are going to be the drill results coming out as we continue to drill this deposit out and continue to grow it. And then, we've got the scoping study results, which came out in December last year. They will be updated with the new drilling. And, as you add to the project, it gets bigger, it gets stronger. Those numbers aren't going to get worse. They're going to get better. So it's going to be how much better does that get, So they're really the two big things to look for this year. And obviously as well in this market, if there's opportunities out there, we'll jump on them as well. So any opportunities to grab additional projects that we think our team can bring expertise to and add value to as well.
Okay. Nick, my last question is, in your opinion, what's the key reasons for investors to want to consider buying your stock today?
It's I always think in investing terms of keeping it as simple as possible. And that doesn't get any simpler than buy low, sell high. The junior gold market right now is in a real trough. Every junior company is out there is cheap right now. If you look for the quality ones, they're going to be the ones that rebound most and come back the most as the market comes back. That's us. So I think that's really it. It's just buy low, sell high. There are sectors of the market which are really high right now. Take a little profit out of that, come into the sectors which are beaten up, and you're going to be very happy, whether it's in 3 months, 6 months, or a year, but you'll be very, very happy with that return as you watch these juniors bounce. So the trick is picking the strong ones with the best growth profiles.
Okay, on that note, Nick, I want to thank you, and we'll look forward to following TriStar in the coming year.
Okay, thank you very much.